thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole here with Ray Jeezy. What's going on, my man?
Hey, what's happening, family? Hey, listen, those of you in PG County, check me out on the Roundball Report tomorrow or Friday, 7 p.m. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m. But also check out our new show, All Hoyas Everything, with the Urban Sports Scene. Because I've been getting trolled about the Hoyas. You know what? And I'm excited about the Hoyas. I'm excited about the tournament run that's to come, possibly Final Four.
Final Four? Why you got to go to heart every though?
It goes like this. Ewing, Zoe, Dikembe, Roy Hibbert. Maybe you can throw Govan in there, and now Yurtsevin, baby. I'm talking about the classic big man is going down. Whatever. Listen. And Sweetney, of course.
Mike Sweetney,
we can't forget about Mike
Sweetney. He was on Sweetney. The show before, man. You already know.
He's joined the show, but check that out. When the Hoyas make the Final Four, we'll be on the court hosting. It's happening.
I feel like this is a shot at me. You know what I mean? It's all good.
It's happening. You know, they beat SMU, baby.
SMU, Syracuse, Oklahoma State, Texas. You already know.
They balling out there.
You already know what it is.
On the winning streak. You know they're going to win tonight, too.
I'm not saying anything, bro. You ain't jinxing. You ain't jinxing the Hoyas, dog.
And I'm just looking forward to Selection Sunday already, bro. I can't wait.
We'll tease out. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. You're right. We are Georgetown. Just say it all. If you're going to say it all the way.
I'm coming to the studio for Selection Sunday. We're going to watch it together like it's UMES.
Hey, I don't like those days, dog, because – you know, used to get at me pretty hard back in the day.
It's over. I'm on the bandwagon now. It's all Hoyas everything. We going hard.
Oh, man. Will T would normally say this, but he's not in the building. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap of the Washington Redskins losing to the Philadelphia Eagles 37-27. And Urban Meyer being at the game. Nathan Bailey from the Burgundy Breakdown will join the show as a guest at 8:20. We'll talk about the Washington Wizards' big win against the Detroit Pistons and the return of Thomas Satoransky. The Wizards are playing the Chicago Bulls tomorrow night. At 8:30, host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armand Lee, will join the show to talk about Anthony Joshua defeating Andy Ruiz to regain his world heavyweight titles. We didn't get a chance to talk about it last week because we had no show, so we'll get to talk about this today. At 8:40, I had this whole setup for just me on the show, so now I have
to. Now you're trying to blame me, huh?
Now I'm blaming you for the last minute saying you're going to be on the show. I'm appreciated, though. I appreciate you being on
the
show.
Listen, my schedule's pretty hectic these days, you know.
We'll talk about Terrence Bud Crawford.
You should be TKO happy about my lateness.
How you say his name, man? Work with me, Ray. Can you say his name? You don't have it with me. Idius Kovalovsky.
Did you watch the fight?
Yeah, I did.
So how don't you know how to say his name?
Because it was a freaking, it's a Russian name. It's still hard to say.
Well, the Terrence Crawford fight. That's what we're talking about. That's all you got to say. You're making it so hard on yourself, sir.
Mean Machine, man. I'm going to say Mean Machine. Retain. That was the dude's name. Mean Machine to retaining his 147.
Sounds like a porn star.
And Saturday,
the Mean Machine.
And Saturday night.
You're making it too hard. That's even worse. You're making it too hard. I'm going to stop talking, man. Get the show started.
Saturday night's fight between Charlo and Harrison, part two.
Oh, I'm looking
finally
forward to that.
At 8:50, Talk Nets, Kevin Nibley will join the show to talk about the Washington Nationals re-signing Steven Strasburg, but losing Anthony Rendon to the LA Angels. But first, right now, we have Nathan Bailey from Burgundy Breakdown on the line. What's going on, Nathan?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Glad to be on the show.
Glad to have you on, my man.
What's up?
What's going on? So, Nathan, on Sunday, the Skins fell to the Philadelphia Eagles 37-27. What was your thoughts on the game?
Well, first, as much as we all rooting for wins, it's the best possible outcome, right? I mean, we got to see Dwayne Haskins finally show us something, but we didn't lose draft stock in the process, and we got a little closer to Bruce Allen being gone. So I'm a pretty happy camper right now.
Oh, you think Bruce Allen? So you are on the side of thinking that Bruce Allen is definitely going to be gone after this season? Do you think it's a real possibility?
I think he's definitely on his way out. I think there's too many, there's too many signs in the water right now. He's not seeming as close to Dan Snyder. All the reports are coming out that there's a little bit of distance growing there. You're not seeing the same pregame and postgame behavior between their relationship. I mean, I think it's all there to be seen. It's just a matter of time and how they do it, whether they let him retire, quote unquote, or leave under his own terms, or who knows.
So you mentioned Dwayne Haskins, the way he played. So talk about that a little bit more. How did you feel he really looked throughout the whole game in terms of his progression, his progression in the pockets, progression, his overall progression in terms of his play? How did you think of Dwayne's play?
I liked what I saw. What I saw was a very decisive player. He didn't seem to question himself. Now, not coincidentally, he was able to avoid the pressure pretty much all day long. I think up until that last play, I don't know if there were any sacks in the game. Okay. So, which is something to be said against, you know, a defensive front led by Fletcher Cox. But I think that what we saw was a major step forward for him. Now, I know there's a lot of people going above and beyond, you know, people saying, oh, that's an 8 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10 performance. I just want to put this into perspective for everybody. Realistically, it feels like 8 or 9 because of where the bar was. This is a 6 out of 10 performance. It wasn't astonishing. It wasn't fantastic. But it was what we needed to see, and it was a big improvement. So I'll definitely go there with it. I just don't want everybody lose their heads over a performance that was pretty good.
Nathan, this is Ray. Does it matter the opponent? Because, you know, the Eagles defense has a reputation for being pretty bad.
And that's the other reason. I'm on the exact same page with you. That's the other reason why I want to pull back from everybody who wants to, you know, crown this as his big shining moment. The Eagles secondary hasn't stopped anybody all season long. Mm. I mean,
Eli. They ain't stopped Eli.
Exactly. I mean, you want to take a little bit away from it, right? But let's be honest, these last two games, he still needs to show something. There can't just be some massive regression going into these last couple of games. He's got to finish on a high note to really calm the doubters as we go into the offseason.
See, I'm on a different side of this. My whole thing is about seeing progression every game, and I feel like I've seen progression from the quarterback over the season. The Eagles, I agree, though. The Eagles secondary is atrocious, but the Detroit Lions defense was bad, too, and, you know, he was – average at that game, and at least against the Eagles, you know, you saw a guy throw for 261, and to be honest with you, he was accurate. You had Sims drop a couple passes. His stats could have been more gaudy, to be honest with you, if, you know, certain players made plays. You want to see progression. You want to see what you're talking about, avoiding the rush, being accurate, being on time. You know, you're not going to have a perfect game, but I think in terms of progression, and that's what it's all about, being a young quarterback, we saw that Sunday.
You know, and I'll definitely give you that. This was probably the first time that I've seen him look like he was in that game mode, like he was ready to, you know, just ball out. Like on that first option pass, or that first option play with Adrian Peterson where he gave us the pump fake.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he just looked like he was in his own zone. And if we see more of that, I'll be very excited for sure.
Hey, just to add to that, I said weeks ago he did not look comfortable. He wasn't ready yet, and there's nothing wrong with that being a rookie. It's just this franchise, we know the state the franchise is in. So it was, let's see what he's got, because he's our only hope, so to speak. But he's growing more and more comfortable each week, which is great to see. And I think that if he finishes the season on a high note, he'll be able to go into the offseason with some confidence, and that's going to do nothing but help him. However, he needs to be more teachable. He has to learn, and then he's going to learn a brand new system because it's going to be a new coaching staff. So, I mean, he's got to prepare himself to study, to put in the work to be a great quarterback. It's come so natural to him so far. I've been a fan of his for a while. So it's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of learning on his part.
You know, what actually kind of drove me a little crazy is after the game, Callahan was asked about the scheme and what was different this time around. And I read his response was basically, to paraphrase, it's the most basic West Coast system we could implement. The day one reads on the first day of training camp in a West Coast offense. And it's like, okay, well, where was that several weeks ago? You know, why now are you guys finally getting it? Like, let's start from scratch. You haven't played him all offseason. You didn't give him the reps that he needed to develop. Why is it taking until now to figure out, hey, maybe we do something simple and just let his talent shine?
That's a great comment slash question.
Yeah, and you mentioned Fletcher. And I want to get into something you mentioned earlier about Fletcher Cox. You know, obviously, you know, one of the more dominant defensive linemen in the game. The skin started Wes Martin for the second start. How do you think he performed against, you know, going against somebody like a Fletcher Cox?
I think Wes Martin may have had one penalty. But let's be honest, up until the announcers brought up that Sheriff wasn't in the game, any passive fan probably had no idea that he was in the game, which for a lineman, that's great.
Yes.
I don't want to know your name as a passive fan, because if I know your name, it probably means you screwed up in most cases. So I think he did pretty well, and I'm really curious to see how he does in these next two games. I do strongly want to caution the Redskins fan base. Everybody goes, oh, if he looks good, we don't need to re-sign Sheriff.
Yeah,
and they blow up how they think Sheriff's played this season. It's like, relax. Sheriff has an all-pro ceiling. Let's not just go throw him in the garbage because we saw a game of passable blocking. Let's relax a little bit.
You know, and as it's been put out there that Brandon Sheriff is going to miss the next two games. He's going to be on the injured list, so he's pretty much done for the season. I want to harp on what you just stated. Could this have been could we have seen the last of Brandon Sheriff in a Skins uniform?
Absolutely, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, I know when you draft a guy at fifth overall, you really anticipate that player to be a cornerstone of your franchise that at least gets to gets contract beyond their rookie contract. And I know we drafted him as a tackle and he ended up being guard, but the entire world told us that's what he was and we still took him. It would have been nice to see him continue success in a Redskins uniform. I mean, it very well could be his last game that we saw this year, but going forward for the Redskins. But you know, if it is, I wish him luck. I wish him well. But I don't know. That would be a shame. That would be a shame for sure.
All right, guys. Again, this is Ray. So my question is for, you know, you, Nathan, and Wally. You all are fans as well as individuals that cover the team, and you're talking about personnel right now. And this is the product that's being put on the field. Dwayne Haskins, you know, Brandon Sheriff. But it was 70% or more Eagles fans at the game to come watch these guys.
About 60%, actually. I was there.
So, whatever.
60%.
So
be precise. About 60%.
What I'm going to ask you is, does it matter who's on the field necessarily? Or does it matter if it's just a complete sweep of the training staff, coaching staff? What is it going to take to get the fans back?
I'll let you handle that, Nathan. Go ahead, Nathan.
I mean, you know, I'll forgive you because you're not a Redskins fan, but you just gave me the biggest softball question that you could give me tonight.
Yeah.
It's easy as pie, man. Fire Bruce Allen.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Just that simple. You want to reinvigorate the fan base? Fire Bruce Allen. What did we do 10 years ago? We got rid of Vinny Serrato. We brought in the guy who we thought was going to be able to run the football operation. And then we brought in Mike Shanahan with a legendary career. It's not hard.
Mm.
All you have to do is give the Redskins fan something to hope for. One thing you have to give this fan base, which I am pridefully part of, is we will take hope and run with it farther than you have ever seen. So you just got to give us a little bit of hope, a little bit of something to latch onto, and firing Bruce Allen is the trick. You'll see the fans come back in droves. Even if the product takes a year or two before it gets back to fully competitive.
I'm glad you said that.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. I have Nathan Bailey from the Burgundy Breakdown on the line. So, Nathan, speaking of hope, there's a guy that was at the press box, Urban Meyer. That's you talking about a splash. It's a guy that's won championships out in college, not in the NFL, but in college. Pristine coach, an all-time great coach in college football. If he came on, signed on with the Washington Redskins, would he provide that hope?
That's an interesting question. I'm sure he would provide the hope. I don't think that's going to happen. Mm. I don't want it to happen.
Okay.
And just to elaborate on that a little bit, not to pour water on everybody's fire right now with him being in the suite on Sunday. But there's a couple of big things to point out when it comes to Urban Meyer. First, everywhere he's been has been followed with some type of scandal or something happening. Mm-hmm. And in this city with this owner, we just can't afford that. That can't happen. You know, it's inevitably, we'll find something he did 25 years ago and it'll just torpedo the whole team. That's one. That two is I'm not sure if you caught it. There was a report out by Ben Standing that referenced the relationship between Urban and Dwayne Haskins not necessarily being the warmest relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's incredibly important. And there's other subtle details that have happened in the last 2 days. Like, for example, Terry McLaurin coming out and saying, he wasn't here for the job. He was here for me. He texted me the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And then followed that up with Dwayne Haskins saying, oh, I didn't even know he was at the game.
Yeah,
I don't think they have that close of a relationship. So I don't think he's coming here for Dwayne. I don't think that there's a draw there. I think what he's actually there for, if we're to believe that he's kind of hiding a little bit, you know, because he came out and said that he was only there to support, you know, his former players and whatnot. If he was there for a purpose, I think that purpose was to counsel Dan on the next head coach candidates to look at, things to look for. I don't think that unless it's a front office position, but again, I really don't see it, because I don't see Urban being a big Dwayne Haskins supporter. Not that he's a detractor, but I don't see him carrying the Dwayne Haskins flag and wanting to come here and run that ship.
I will say this, because I was at the game and I got like a tidbit on it. He was definitely there. He was there for a reason. Put it that way. He was there for a reason. Urban was there for a particular reason. Now,
so you're just going to tease that and not lay anything out there?
He was there for a reason. It wasn't for what Terry was saying. It sounds good. I'll say that it sounds good, but he was there for a reason. Now, will he take the position or whatnot? He was chumming with Alex. You know, he was chumming with Alex. You know, they tried to make it look as if that he was just there just to be there, but he was there for a particular reason. Now, will he take the job is a whole different beast, but he was there for a reason.
I mean, that like you said as we started this conversation, that would provide a spark to this fan base. I have my concerns.
Yeah.
You know, just like I didn't love the Jay Gruden hire and what it meant for RG3's career, but you never know.
And Nathan, this is what I do agree with. I do agree with you is that, like, you know, my thing about trying to bring Urban Meyer to this team is that this is a guy that doesn't really have any pro experience. And I'm not really cool with, like, college coaches with no pro experience. Pete Carroll was, you know, Pete Carroll coached New England, so he had pro experience. Nick Saban's had pro experience. But we're talking about this is a college guy. This is a real college guy. So this is a whole different situation.
Yeah, and this fan base knows exactly how that turned out.
Oh, yeah,
it's not great.
In addition to Urban Meyer, Josh Norman also made an appearance at the game. And afterwards, I heard maybe you were one of the reporters that spoke to him, but I heard he definitely summoned some reporters to him, and he said he's still elite.
No, he said he was still elite.
You guys' thoughts on that?
That's a little scary, to be honest with you. I'm seeing, like, I'm having visions of a CTE lawsuit in the Redskins' future.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Something's been untreated there, because you can't be that delusional. I get you can jump over a bull, but when's the last time you actually, you know, held your coverage down for longer than 3 seconds? I don't know how he could think he's elite.
I know. Josh, I felt bad for Josh, man. Like, he got beat. Like, he comes into the game, game-winning touchdown on him, Ward, and I'm like, dang, bro, like, really? This is going to happen to you right now? Like, as soon as I saw the touchdown, I was like, dang, that's Norman, isn't it? Dang, tough. Like, don't you feel bad for Norman a little bit? Just a little bit?
Honestly, it made me laugh a little bit, because at the end of the game, I'm like, you know, like, we saw what we wanted from Haskins. Like I told you, it turned out perfect. You know, as much as we want to win, the loss is actually to our benefit. And I just sat there and chuckled. I was like, of course it's Josh Norman that gives us this touchdown. I mean, it had to be. That's the 2019 season, wrapped up in a pretty little bow for us all to look back on years from now.
You're not lying, Nathan. But Nathan, hey, thanks for being on. Nathan, before I let you go, let our listeners know about the Burgundy Breakdown.
So you can check me out on Twitter. Everything I do flows through there. I try to write as much as I can. But like I said, the last time I was on the show, I'm actually getting my MBA right now through LSU.
Sweet.
So it's taking up a lot of my time. But the articles will continue to come. But in the meantime, I'm still on Twitter. I'm still interacting. I take all the smoke because, honestly, it's fun for me. So bring it if you don't agree with me. I'll gladly tell you why you're wrong. You can follow me on Twitter at the Burgundy BD for Breakdown. The Burgundy BD on Twitter. And let me know what you think.
I'll introduce you to Robert Henson, brother. Y'all can argue all day.
Hey, Nathan, thanks for being on, my man. You know I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. That is Nathan Bailey from the Burgundy Breakdown.
Oh, man, I'm so excited, you know, right now. Only two games left. We don't have to talk Redskins for a while.
What coming
up
about,
soon.
Bro? This is the moneymaker, man. You got to stop hating, dog. Like, you got to stop hating.
It's going to be all about the NBA coming up. And then baseball will creep back in, you know,
baseball
right there around opening day.
Baseball, you can
on Urban Sports Team. We got the Caps.
Can we champions,
you know, so many good
you
things.
Right, though. We got champions. You know, real talk, you're right. We got champions,
that's right,
though. You know what I'm saying? I'll give you that. We got
Strauss back. That hasn't even been a topic.
Georgetown's not a topic.
I'm just upset.
Strauss is a topic. What are you talking about?
Oh, it is? Did I miss that part?
Yeah, you missed it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive my I guess my lack of hearing.
All right, man. Big win for the Wizards.
Georgetown's not a topic,
look,
though. Why not?
Yeah, it's not. Because I didn't want it for you. That's why. Big win for the Wizards last night.
We'll save always everything.
We'll talk about that after the break. Listen to Urban Sports Safe. For ages, you dig? Deuces.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole. I'm looking at my outline all wrong. Hey, my boy Ray.
I didn't even get the outline. So.
We'll tease out. Last night, the Washington Wizards defeated the Detroit Pistons 133-119. Wizards are now 8-17. First off, do you think the Wizards like underachieved this season?
You know what? They have scored a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
And when you score a lot of points, you should win more basketball games, in my opinion.
Yeah.
However, defense, of course, continues to be their Achilles heel. But listen to this, and I know this isn't necessarily a direct answer to your question,
sure.
But my man, Coach Jimmy Flyhelm, and that's my guy, he said, why even try for the A-spot when you're just going to get murdered by Milwaukee in the first round? Why don't you go ahead, let yourself get a lottery pick, continue to improve your team, and continue to make a good push for some longevity of decent basketball and grow your talent around Bradley Beal? Why not? Versus, you know, you continue to continue to try to compete.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, if you get the A spot, you're going home.
That's true.
You may not even get a game. You'll probably get swept in the first round. It doesn't make sense. What do you think?
Yeah, he's right. It's a valid point. So you can get a better player.
But as competitors, though, I don't think that's what they want to do.
They're
close to the A spot even with their record.
Yeah,
I was saying before last night, they were 3.5 games out.
Yeah, I just, when you look at teams like, all right, you look at a team like Detroit, though. They didn't have Blake Griffin most of the season, and they're like 11.
No,
before
they're under, man.
Yeah, but before yesterday, we're 11-15. And you're like, they don't have a scorer like Bradley Beal. They don't got a guy who gets buckets.
But they play
like,
defense. They got Drummond defense. In the middle.
That's what I'm saying. But still, though, but they're 11-15. Like, you're 8-17. You got a dude that averages about 30 points. I mean, sorry, about 28 points per game. He's like 27.8 or something like that. Like, you can't – are you telling me you can't get better than 8-17? You got Oklahoma. Like, look at Oklahoma, OKC. Everybody thought that Chris Paul was done. They, like, fighting for, like, the last season,
I mean,
in the West.
Miami. It's all about a mentality. Again, it does come back to coach. I told you, I kind of jumped off the Brooks train, man. I like him as an individual. Mm-hmm. He's always somebody who, from a media standpoint, he's cordial. But that's not what this is about. It's about basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
And looking at this team right now, they already were struggling defensively. Although the Sixers game and the Miami game, I felt like they were taking a step forward.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Right now, one of your best scorers on the team is Bertans, Davis Bertans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's growing value, by the way. People are wanting to
trade
for him, which I think you can build for the future if you do trade him.
Yeah, you get first round.
However, he's giving you so much from the perimeter. He can score.
He plays the attitude, too. I love it.
He does. Here's the thing. With him and Wagner, you lose something defensively. Mm-hmm. That's the hard part. So it's like, do we play these guys and continue to try to outscore teams? Or do we trade Bertans and potentially get either some future value for him, you know, meaning draft picks?
Yeah.
Or do you try to go out and get some better defensive players? You know, I don't know who's out there necessarily. Maybe you can get a guy like Julius Randle. I'm not saying he's on the trading block.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty good offensive player and somebody who's going to give you some defensive toughness. But what can this team do to fix their defense? I don't know.
I think it's a coaching mentality, to be honest with you. I think it's a coaching mentality.
Right, you got to play with more. You got to play more of grit and toughness.
I think when you play defense that bad, to be real with you, when you play it that bad, it's more like not the personnel. It's just like you weren't coaching this up. Like, they're so bad. Like, they're horribly defense. Like, and they got pieces that you would say, like, you know what? You should be a better defensive team. There's pieces where you can say, you know what? You should be better defensive. They're like, Troy Brown Jr. coming out of Oregon was supposed to be a good defender.
Well, here's the thing I will say. Isaiah Thomas highlighted that we don't communicate on defense. That's a big problem. And you know, communication is everything.
Yeah, defense, yeah.
But if you watch them play, they still aren't communicating effectively on defense from my perspective. I could be wrong, but this is the problem. Again, they score a lot. They scored 125 points against the Clippers and lost by 25.
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense what happens with this team on from the defensive end, defensive standpoint, whatever. And I'm wondering if maybe the general manager or even maybe Ted, who both of them have been in unison with Scott Brooks saying, well, this is all about player development.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody is having their career games against you. Brandon Clark just had his.
Yeah.
Everybody scores. Even teams that struggle offensively come in and they score against you.
Yeah.
So maybe they need to rethink the strategy and say, hey, why don't we pay more attention to defense and not just development? Because Rui's development, even with some of the limitations, as we talked about before we came on. So, dude, it has to be a change. It has to be a change. Or you're going to hire a defensive-minded assistant.
Yeah.
That's what Doc Rivers does. Doc Rivers has great assistants.
Amazing assistants. Like
Ty Lue, Sam Cassell.
Oh, he has guys who know their stuff. Some who are former head coaches and whatnot. Look at even the Lakers.
It was
former head coaches. There are a bunch of former head coaches on the staff.
It was said about Doc that Thibodeau is what helped make his Boston team so great defensively.
Yeah.
You have to think about making some type of change. I like the fact that you're loyal to your guys, but still, it's not working.
So the Wizards play the Chicago Bulls tomorrow night. Thomas Satoransky returns to D.C. He's always been a fan favorite here. If Sato was the starting point guard here, would this team be better? A lot of people were very in love with Satoransky.
He doesn't turn the ball over. He's got good size. Mm-hmm. And he can score.
Yeah.
And he's a pass-first guy. But I can't say he would have made you better because, again, defensively they were bad when he was on the roster as well. Mm-hmm. Again, it's about defense, not about offense.
Yeah.
They score the basketball. It's not the problem. The thing I want to say from a team perspective is you got to beat teams like Detroit and Chicago right now. These are teams you're supposed to beat. So go in and handle your business. And that comes back to the coach getting you motivated.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ish Smith is just as good as Thomas Satoransky.
Ish Smith is perfect for his offense right now.
Yeah, I think he's perfect for it. He finds the open guy, makes shots, makes a smart play.
Terrell Allen would be perfect for this team. You know what I'm saying? I like him, though. Man. He's balling right now. He's passing the ball. I'm being funny to some degree, but he is passing the ball.
I hate you, dog. You threw that. I asked the question on social media about Sato's return. Would the Wizards be better on Twitter? You can tweet us at Urban Sports, and you can also hit us up on our Urban Sports Facebook page. The same questions on our Facebook page. At Steven_Newman1 tweeted Thomas Satoransky impacted Troy Brown, but there are two schools of thought. One, Sato blocks. Troy Brown's from getting minutes since they've stylistically are similar. Sato aids Brown's development while also providing the Wizards with a duplicate when one isn't on the floor. Also on Facebook, my man Tony Snow said posted no, but he was very reliable.
The main difference, in my opinion, between Ish Smith and Satoransky is the size factor. That's all.
I think, Ish Smith is a better this season he's a better shooter. Like, he's been knocking down crucial threes.
You remember him from Wake Forest, man. He's always been a streaky shooter.
Yeah.
You know, and efficient. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it's not a surprise that he's playing pretty well.
Man, he's an awesome ball handler.
Isaiah Thomas killed last night, though.
He killed.
Even though I know there's been some folks that have been saying that the IT experiment needs to be over. But
I know a lot of people hate on
it. You got to give him time, though, man. He's still coming back from an injury. And we know what he's capable of when he plays, you know, at his best. So give him some more time.
No, I'm with you. But I think, I mean,
Troy.
I know. So true, though. Real talk. But I actually like Ish Smith in terms of ISO ball, like, you know, one-on-one, beast, dog. Way better than Sato. Like, he can break down his opponent.
He's got that hezzy with him.
That hezzy is real.
And he can cross over, definitely. I love him.
I'm a fan. I've become a fan of Ish Smith, to be honest with you. All right. We didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but Anthony Joshua, Nigerian, she's the champ again. Host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armon Lee, will join us after the break and listen to the urban sports scene for ages. You dig? Doses.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, Eric Cooje with a triumphant comeback. Morris. But tonight.
Don't call it a comeback.
Listening to the urban sports scene with Ray Jeezy. myself, Ole. Wilty's out. We're supposed to have my man Armon Lee. Maybe we'll try to get him on later. But we're going to talk about Anthony Joshua getting back his heavyweight championship belts. Can we watch the fight?
Yes. But can we also talk about the fact that he looks as though he's going to spar with Fury?
I heard about that.
So is it really going down? Fury said he hopes he's serious. That's all Fury said. Fury said, I'm down for the cause. And according to Anthony Joshua, when they were younger, they sparred together.
So he said they're
all about this British boxing thing right now.
Yeah, he wants to fight. You know, he wants to bring it back. They want to have a big fight in Wembley, I believe. Like, they want to, you know, sell out Wembley. They can have that fight instead of having it in the U.S. have it.
The Anthony Joshua that fought Ruiz can't beat.
I disagree.
Tyson Fury.
Oh, I thought you meant. I think that Anthony Joshua.
You're not a Wilder fan.
No, I think you'd be Wilder. Though.
But you're not. You're a little biased. You're not objective when it comes to Wilder.
No, I'm real. I'm totally real. Listen to me when I say this. If he fights the way he fought Ruiz, trying to like man up, body up, he's getting his ass knocked out. I'm being real. Like
Wilder's getting knocked out.
No. Anthony Joshua. I'm saying if he fights from the outside, if he fights him like he fought Ruiz trying to fight from the outside.
He can't fight that way. He did what he had to do to get his titles back.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at it. And the thing is, when Ruiz was able to let his hands go, he clenched, which from a fan perspective, got on my nerves.
He clinched. He only clinched when he went inside. Only when Wilder, again, only when Joshua wanted to go inside. If he stayed outside, used his jab effectively, Ruiz wasn't touching him.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he should have done the first
fight. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, if he fights that way against Wilder, he can beat Wilder. Like, if you try to box Wilder, you can beat Wilder. The problem is when you lose to Wilder is when you try to show that you a man, and Wilder shows you that, you know what, you ain't man enough.
Okay.
That's my thing.
So, I don't want to get too far off topic, in my opinion, although King Kong was outboxing Deontay Wilder,
mm-hmm.
Deontay Wilder, just from a pure boxing perspective, he's getting better.
You think so? I don't see, this is my thing.
His hands are not as wild as they used to be. Because remember, he was just always trying to set you up for a big shot. Now, he was trying to set Ortiz for a big shot, but he was still boxing, though. Like, it wasn't like he was getting hurt. He wasn't hurt.
No, that's not. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. That's why I'm cutting you off.
But that's where I'm guessing that Fury, if he fights the way, again, I'm talking about Wilder, if Wilder fights Fury the way he fought Ortiz, then he's going to lose. Because he's not a better boxer than Fury.
Yeah, so, I agree with that too.
But I feel as though Deontay Wilder is showing improvement because he's throwing like wide, wild punches.
No, he was. I see, and he
would keep his hands down. So I'm guessing that there's somebody there in his ear saying, you know, you got to continue to grow as a pure boxer because you may not knock everybody out.
Yeah, my thing
as
about
evidenced by Fury, you know, Fury got up. Now again, that was 12th round,
like
but still
came out like Undertaker. But now my thing about, and I don't want to keep getting off topic and just talk about Wilder, but.
Because you hate Wilder.
No, I don't hate Wilder. Actually, I like Wilder. I think the notion that I hate Wilder is like kind of off. I like box. I mean, Wilder is sloppy in terms of a boxer. He's
but not as bad as he used to.
I agree. I'm not like arguing that.
Okay.
But if you look at, all right, for instance, he wasn't even active against Ortiz. Like, he wasn't active in that fight. He kept waiting for one shot. He got his shot. And once he got his shot, it was a wrap. Like, he waited for it, and he set him up, too. He made Ortiz feel like he can hurt Wilder. Wilder got him in that, he got him right where he wanted to and dropped him. So, I don't knock Wilder. I think Wilder has electric power. It's game-changing power. It's not half-ass power. It's game-changing power.
The hardest right hand since Tyson.
I agree.
Bottom line.
You're not going to hear me, and I'm not going to argue that either. But my thing is that if and I don't want to get, like, again, we're getting off topic, but if Anthony Joshua fights the fight that he fought against Ruiz, stays from the outside and tries to, it won't be the sexy fight. It won't be the sexy heavyweight fight. That's what I'm saying. If he fights that style, he can beat Anthony Joshua. If he tries to go inside with Anthony Joshua and try to fight Joshua like he fought Klitschko, like he fought Klitschko.
Fury?
No. If Joshua fights Wilder,
like Joshua fought Klitschko.
Okay. Wilder will beat Joshua. Wilder will beat Joshua.
I'm being real. I feel as though Joshua is going to have a very good game plan. And another thing is, Joshua respected Ruiz. That's another
thing.
He respected his hands. You know he's going to respect Wilder.
Yeah, he's going.
So he's going to fight tentatively, I think. That's why I think, at least going in, Wilder has the edge. But Anthony Joshua is the better boxer. It's just he's going to be on his A game because he will get knocked out. And Wilder just doesn't get knocked out. Doesn't happen.
No, he doesn't get knocked out. That's my point. He doesn't get knocked out.
And Ortiz in both fights hit him pretty good.
I agree.
And the first fight, he actually did have him hurt.
He had him stunned. The first fight,
Right, and that's why I said, man, not only is Wilder showing progression, but he's showing he got a chin.
No. Again, you're not going to argue that at all.
What I didn't like about, from a fan perspective, about the way Joshua fought Ruiz is, again, he was doing what he needed to do to get his titles back. He wasn't necessarily fighting a sexy fight, but it was smart. And that's what he needs to do. He needs the game plan properly. And he learned. He also lost some weight because he took the criticism to heart, saying,
he was
like Andre Ward was like, he tried to look like a model as opposed to being a boxer.
It's true.
And he took it to heart. He came in slimmer. Ruiz went the opposite direction. Ruiz blew me, though. I know everybody's talked about his condition.
I agree. But that's the thing, this is a heavyweight championship fight, bro. Like, that was tacky. I'm sorry. It was just a heavyweight championship fight. You come in this thing like 280. Like, that's ridiculous.
If I'm him.
Like, it's ridiculous.
If I'm him, I stick with my same camp, maybe, but I call Luis Ortiz. Luis Ortiz looked good for that second fight. And Luis Ortiz is older.
Bro, you don't get fat. I don't care what it is.
Luis Ortiz looked good, though, right? I'm saying
he looked great.
He looked muscular.
He looked great. Look, this is my problem, man. Like, and I was telling, and I told somebody.
Ruiz freaking. He lived in a moment too long, bro.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, this is. All right, Ray, work with me here. Like, why would you gain that much? This is your opportunity to be a star, right? Your second is to prove everybody, all the haters, all the doubters, that, you know what, I'm real, I'm legit. you come in this joint gaining way more weight than you did in fight one. People already criticizing your physique anyway. You come and gain more weight. Like, to me, and as an outsider looking in, I'm like, bro, you didn't even think you was gonna win. You didn't think you was gonna win the fight. That's why you gained weight. That's how I look at it. Because I felt like you're the underdog. Even in fight two, you're the underdog. You come in this situation gaining more weight. Like, you didn't take. And he kept saying, I didn't take my camp serious. I gained weight.
It's not that. I don't think. It's not the fact that he didn't think he was gonna win. I feel as though he experienced and achieved a level of success that he never. Ever. Quite imagine. The first ever Mexican heavyweight. The first ever. We talking about something so historical. Mm-hmm. And he lived in it. Look what happened when Tony Harrison upset Charlo. I can't say this on air, but he said, I'm about to go F a couple H's. That's what he said, right? Or a couple W's, however you want to say it, right? He said that right after. You know Ruiz was living it up, and he could not escape. He could not escape that lifestyle. So this is a chance for him maybe to regroup and say, all right, maybe I'll get a Dominic Brazil in the ring or possibly a Big Baby Miller, or I'll have an opportunity to prove myself again. But he knows
he should get Ortiz. He should fight Ortiz.
Ortiz?
Yeah, he should fight Ortiz. He'll eat his ass alive, but he should try to fight Ortiz.
His hands are fast enough to beat Ortiz.
Well, his hands are probably like one of the fastest. He's got probably one of the fastest hands in the heavyweight division. I know he's big, but he has probably one of the fastest hands.
And see, even though his hands were fast, even if he came into shape, I don't think Joshua was going to let him get off. Joshua was going to Lennox Lewis him to death.
Yeah, he is. He will never get that opportunity. He will never give him the opportunity again to like to.
He was get that Lennox Lewis jab, you know. He woke Joshua up. I still don't think Joshua's aura is back though. I don't. It didn't look like it to me.
What aura?
His aura. The aura that he was.
Anytime you get knocked down like that, your aura is broken. He's gonna have to beat.
He's gonna have to put together a consecutive streak against good opponents like Julian Williams did.
Yeah, he's gonna have. Yeah, that too. And to me, I mean, to be real with you, he's gonna have to beat one of them dudes. That's what it is. It is what it is. You're gonna have to beat one of them dudes.
Yeah, and that's where. Match room, they're gonna have to make the fight happen.
Yeah.
I'm sick of this. Oh, he's a star, you gotta come to England.
It's gonna happen though.
Against Fury, maybe if Wilder beats Fury, you're gonna have to throw the bag at Wilder. I don't care if Joshua has to take less. You have to pay a man that's undefeated and knocks everybody out. And the fight needs to be on neutral ground, not Saudi Arabia, but it can't be in the States, maybe it can't be in England. It's not fair.
Who do you think is gonna warrant the money though? That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, I get your point. You're right. If I'm Anthony Joshua, I'm gonna be real with you. If I'm Anthony Joshua, like, I would take less if it's all about rebuilding my image, right? But in terms of, I still make more money than Anthony Joshua. I mean, than Wilder, though. Overseas, I still make more money than Wilder. You know what I'm saying?
Like, overall, he's the bigger draw, yes. Yeah. But we're talking about undefeated. And
see, you're looking at
and
it.
Regardless of how much he may get, let's say from the gate, or you know how much his contract. Oh, you know he's going to make a lot of money on TV because it's going to be the biggest fight.
But you're talking
in
about
a long
competitive
time.
Competitive nature, though. That's what you're talking about. More of a competitive event, like, you know, if you're a competitor.
That's
you're
what
like
I'm saying. It comes down to Eddie Hearn, because Eddie Hearn's not going to let him do it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Unless the money's right for him too. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? That's not fair. We'll probably never see Wilder Joshua in my eyes.
You don't think we'll never? Unless we're going to see. Like Fury. I think we'll see Fury and Joshua. I think we'll see that pretty sooner than.
See, that's the thing. Regardless of whether Fury beats Wilder or not, you're probably going to see that fight.
Mm-hmm.
But if Wilder beats Fury, you have to make the Joshua fight happen. And see, Wilder's going to say, I'm undefeated. I've beaten everybody. You got to let me. I mean, you got to. I hold the cards. You got to let me fight in the States. You need to come here. You need to give me the bigger purse. It's going to happen. I know it is. And if you don't, he's going to walk. He's like, I don't need you. But in some ways, he does, though.
Who?
Because Joshua is the bigger draw,
yeah,
like you said.
Yeah, but I think if you're a competitor, like I'm with you, Ray, this is what I really totally agree with. And this is only, we're going to get to Bud Crawford on a similar note, that if you're Wilder, I mean, if you're Anthony Joshua, man, bro, you just got knocked out. You got knocked out by Ruiz. Bro, it's time to rebuild your image. And it's like, all right, I need the world to know I'm the best heavyweight in the game. I'm gonna take less to fight this dude, and I'm gonna prove to the world that I'm the best heavyweight.
Exactly, yeah, that's what we need to do. But like I said, Eddie Hearn's probably not gonna let that happen. However, Dillian White, they made him like a top contender.
Bruh.
It's just boxing is so annoying. The politics of it is frustrating, and that's what we're getting ready to talk about when it comes to Terrence Crawford as well.
I think Armand's on the line.
Armand's going to join us now. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think we got Armand now. I think we finally got Armand.
Armand was good, player.
You can't say it was good when
he's
on.
No, my bad. He's not on yet.
Yeah, you can't say Armand was good until Armand is on.
We can't talk about Ruiz with Armand. We just can't. We got to move on to Bud. But
we got to go to Bud, I know.
And maybe even a little Hurd if we got time because, you know, Hurd is about to fight coming up, too.
Yeah. Hey, Armand, what's good, my man?
What's up, Hey, what's going on, y'all, man?
Nothing much, my man. So, Armand, we about to talk about Bud, man. Let's go straight to Bud. Bud B, I don't want to say dude's name. I'm going to mess it up. I messed up in our pregame. So, I'm going to say Mean Machine. Bud knocked out Mean Machine.
Well, let me tell you something, Mean Machine.
Yeah, I know, right? Mean Machine in the ninth round. TKO, excuse me. TKO in the ninth round. Your thoughts on that fight, man?
You know, shout out to Bud. You know, Terrence Crawford, I've got a lot of thoughts on the entire card, right? But I'm trying to focus just to the fight. Mm-hmm. Because Max Kellerman, Joe Tessitore, and Timothy Bradley, they were blowing me.
They're blowing all everybody, of us, man. All of us. I'm sick of this. And Andre Ward, all of us. I'm sick,
well,
oh, man.
I said this for Dre. Dre kept it funky. You remember after the fight, right? And they're doing the breakdown, mm-hmm. and Chess is doing this whole spiel about, hey, if a fighter wants to fight somebody, the fight will happen. Yeah. And Terrence Crawford wants to fight anybody on the PBC side. And Timothy Bradley was sounding like the WWF manager. He's all crazy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Getting all worked up. Now, shout out to Trey. Trey didn't even really engage in that. Now, obviously, Andre, the fan of Timothy, or no, I'm sorry, fan of Terrence Crawford, as we all are. And Crawford, to get back to your original point, he's an amazing fighter. There's nothing you can say about him that hasn't been said, right? He closes the show. But the problem when it comes to Bud is that 147 at the welterweight class where he's at now, who has he beaten?
Exactly.
Right? All of his resume, and again, this, I hate the fact that we're in the day and age now where if you're even slightly critical, it comes off like you're hating. So let me make sure for all of the listeners, I love Terrence Crawford. He's one of my favorite fighters to watch. But we got to be honest. You know, he was fighting Calvisi unorthodox for whatever reason, right? It made no sense to do it, and he was struggling. There's no reason why Calvisi should have laid him down. And I know the ref didn't rule it as a knockdown.
It was a knockdown. That was a knockdown.
It was a knockdown. It was a knockdown. And I know, Wally, you might have, we talked about this several times in the past. Errol Spence, and you know, he's a ways away now because obviously rehab.
Yeah.
But when he was in his prime just a few months ago,
he
is smarter than Calvisi.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, the caliber of fighter at some point has to weigh in. And I'm not, if you want to say Terrence Crawford based on his resume, particularly at 140, still among the best pound for pound, his skill set is better than anyone at 147. The problem is we've never seen him be tested at 147.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking Bud in terms of scheduling the fight. I will knock him because he shouldn't have resigned with Top Rank.
There it is.
They have failed him at every single corner. So to go full circle to why I was so upset with the broadcast on Saturday, Max Kellerman, who knows better. Joe Tessitore doesn't know much about boxing. I don't know why he's still doing Top Rank broadcast. I really don't. Max knows better. So when he's saying the only fighter at welterweight who's not ducking Terrence Crawford or Sean Porter, I'm like, come on, Max, don't do that. Because on merit, Spence and Bud is a 50-50 fight. That's on merit. But when you add in the business side, right. Mm-hmm. you can add
exactly
both of Terrence Crawford's pay-per-view fights. Add both of them together, and they don't equal either one.
Errol Spence
you
fight.
Just single out one of Spence's fights.
Yep.
He had two pay-per-view fights this year. You can add up both of Bud's fights, and they don't come to either one of Spence's pay-per-view fights. So while Spence is ascending, his star is growing, and again, he is about that. You know, we all happy that he's healthy and he's going to pull through. But his star is ascending, whereas Bud, who is a great fighter, he's plateaued. So if you're Spence, why would you ever do a 50-50 fight with Bud?
Why?
Doesn't make sense.
It don't make no sense.
Why would you do a 55-45 fight with him? Yeah. That's how bad Top Rank has ruined the earning potential of Terrence Crawford, and that's my biggest takeaway for Saturday night.
And I want to add this to it. Like, think about this, right? And I tweeted this out, kind of like, think like, all right, regardless of what you think about Bud Earl, who's better, you know what I mean? Who's the best? You know, Canelo, whoever, right?
Right.
But Bud is arguably pound for pound the best boxer in the game, right? Pound for pound,
right? Right.
Think about it, all your time of watching boxing. And there is talent over in that same weight class. There is talent. It's not like there's no talent. Right. Have you ever seen a person pound for pound, like arguably the best boxer in the game, not pay-per-view value? Think about it. Like, not. Like Roy was different because nobody was at Roy's level. Like, nobody was at Roy's level in his weight class. So it didn't matter, right? He'll do an HBO fight. It didn't matter. But think about it. Bud has opponents. Like, Bud has opponents. He has multiple opponents that he can see. Like, and he can't do pay-per-view. Like, Earl is all pay-per-view now. That's all Earl is pay-per-view. But right. Bud can't. We're talking about a dude that's arguably pound for pound the best dude boxing in the sport. Everybody makes this argument that he's the best dude pound for pound. All Earl does now is selling out venues, and now he's pay-per-view. Bud can't be pay-per-view, and he can't sell?
Yeah, so I will say this one thing. There have been pound-for-pound fighters who haven't been able to sell. Andre Ward would be one of them. But the difference is between Bud and Ward or Bud and CP, God bless the dead. Dre and Purnell, they weren't knockout punches. Like, Bud is an exciting fighter who is a pound-for-pound topless guy who has legit competition in his weight class but can't sell.
Yeah.
And that's no fault of him. It's because his promoter is trash.
Of course, agreed.
And how many times do we have to see the same story?
Yeah.
Miguel Cotto had to leave Bob Arum. Manny Pacquiao had to leave Bob Arum. Floyd Mayweather had to leave Bob Arum. They are ruined. Like, again, this is not me criticizing Bud. Bud's skill set is amazing. He fights just as well orthodox as he does unorthodox. It's not a gimmick. He's just that great of a fighter. The problem is, we haven't got to see it. So I don't care how great you are at basketball if you're only playing in your church league. If you're really nice, Slim, go up to a D1 school. Let's see what you got.
Mm-hmm.
You can be Michelangelo. You can be one of the greatest painters in the world. But if you don't ever show anybody your stuff, who will know? Terrence Crawford is an amazing fighter, but I can't tell when you fighting Amir Khan in 2019. Terrence Crawford was bragging about being Jeff Horn.
I know.
I'm thinking to myself,
that bothered me, man.
And Ben Benitez.
That bothered me.
And Ben Benitez, he was. But
like,
just to really touch on Timothy Bradley again. Timothy Bradley is a hypocrite, right? When he was a top rank, who was he fighting? Pacquiao.
Exactly.
He was fighting top rank guys.
Remember, Ruslan Provodnikov gave him the work. Timothy Bradley had to go on the knee just to survive that fight.
Exactly.
Timothy Bradley, I ain't worried about him.
Hey, Armand, these dudes are so company-oriented, corporate.
It's not even
They are just all ESPN top rank now. And if the sad thing for Max is Max just straight up flipped on Earl since he left HBO. He's flipped
you,
on him.
Man. He flipped on him. Max was like the biggest Earl fan. Bruh, the biggest Earl fan. And all.
Hey. Max hurt me, Slim. Because, I don't have much respect for him. I didn't say that. But I don't respect Joe Cesar's boxing act. You understand? Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard him enough to know, okay, you just got the bag, and I ain't had anybody got an opportunity to run with it. But you can tell, if you're a boxing fan, you listen to Cesar's calls, you know what time it is. Timothy Bradley, like y'all said, man, he's a hypocrite, man. You cartoon character, whatever. But Max knows better, bro. He knows better. And he has a platform. So the fact that he started tap-tapping stances for ESPN and being the company man, I was really disappointed in him, man, because there's nobody who knows anything about the sport who would be like Errol Smith is ducking Terrence Crawford. Like, that's just not – and number one, you talking slick like that when a man is rehabbing. You understand?
Yeah.
So that whole situation was nasty. I was really turned off and disappointed by Matt Kellerman and what he was saying Saturday night.
Yeah, and another thing is, if there's anybody, if there's one person that's ducked Terrence Crawford, the only one I can think of maybe is Pacquiao, because at one point he was top ranked.
Yeah.
He could have fought him.
Yeah. But
Danny Garcia, these folks, disrespectful.
Yeah, and Pacquiao ducked him. Sounds like Pacquiao ducked Smith. and I'll be fair, straight up, I'm not even mad at Pacquiao for doing it, right? He gave forth one of the best fights, in my opinion, the fight of the year, performance of the year, when he beat Keith earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give him credit. You get to a certain point, a certain stage in your career, when Floyd, before Floyd retired the last time, and people were like, oh, man, I want Floyd to fight Canelo again. I'm like, y'all crazy. Or they were like, oh, I want Floyd to fight Golovkin. I'm like, no. Like, at this point, there's no reason to do that. You know what I'm saying? You've reached a certain status. It's not like they're both in their prime. So I'm not mad at Pacquiao for not wanting to fight with Bud or Spence. But I do think Keith Thurman wouldn't fight Bud. I don't think he's wanted with Bud. But again, Keith don't want it with Spence either.
I'm done with, Keith.
The idea that Errol Spence, who's been one of the most avoided fighters for the last 5 years, and he only started to get fights once he got the strap.
Yeah.
The fact that he's wanting to fucking anybody is nuts. It's nuts.
It's crazy. Like, these dudes are killing me, man.
Armand, you said Pacquiao was smart. You know, he made some good decisions for his career. Speaking of that, my man Jared Hurd, he recognized he switched trainers. He's not ready for that rematch with J-Rock. What do you think about just his decision to get, like, sort of a tune-up fight and try to get his aura back before he steps back in the ring with Julian J-Rock Williams?
Man, I mean, to me, I think, when we get to certain fights and certain fighters and circumstances, like, I get it. Like, when Keith hurt his shoulder, I understood that he didn't want to get in there right with Sean or right with Spence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Certain fighters are like, okay, I understand you don't want to get right back at it. But for Hurd, you need to get in there with J-Rock. Like, stop playing. But I don't feel like he needs to tune up. Like, he was on the cusp. Like everybody was ready for the Chardo, or you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody was like overlooking J-Rock. So, like, I don't think, unless there's something that I have missed, maybe there was an injury in camp, I don't know. But unless, barring something like that, Bob bro, run it back. You know what I'm saying? Because had he beat J-Rock, nobody would have an issue. You understand what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. We'll find out next month. According to Hurd, he's going to come out with all the information we need to know as to why he made the decision he made. But one person that Jared Hurd did beat was Tony Harrison. He's getting his rematch with Jermell. And watching that fight, you know, all of the boxing analysts on television were saying, oh, Jermell won the fight. I didn't feel that way. I felt like Tony Harrison did a good job of, you know, what's the term I'm looking for? He seemed to be able to counter. That's what I'm looking. He counterboxed the heck out of Charlo. Every time Charlo came forward, he seemed to have an answer for him, at least from my vantage point. I feel as though he's got a good opportunity, as long as he had a good camp, to be competitive in this fight. I don't think he's going to get knocked out. What do you think?
Yeah, man. Point, lady. You talk about ring generalship. Like, when you get in there with Jermell, you know what time it is. You know what he's looking for, and that was a big showcase event for him as well. And then, like you said, Harris did his thing. He controlled the ring. He was able to telegraph. And like you said, mm-hmm. counterpunch to death. And yeah, like, that's like, when you can box, I know we're in the day and age where everybody, the only thing that matters are knockouts to too many people, right? But when you can box, you give yourself so many opportunities to win. Now, I don't know. That fight was very, very close. And I think he even knows, like, to beat somebody like that, you got to leave no doubt, especially in an event like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't foresee him getting knocked out by Charlo, but, you know, it's going to be tough to beat him. It's going to be tough because I hold both of them to a high regard. But, like I said, he fought a hell of a fight, man, and he's not a layover. And that wasn't an easy fight. I wasn't that bad with a draw. And like the whole thing, the fight was a very competitive fight, and there's no reason for me to think, especially if he continues and has another great camp, that it's not going to be another tough, hot seat contested fight again. But to beat someone of that fast, you got to leave no doubt.
Armand, it's been great talking to you. You gave Wally a chance to watch the Lakers game. Well, you know, we talked about Hurd and Charlo. So, hey, thank you so much. And, hey, anytime, man, you know, you always welcome your family on Urban Sports Scene.
Oh, man, you already know what time it is, y'all, man.
I figured
you.
All right, thanks, Armand. Come on, Lakers. Appreciate you. That's the homie Armand Lee from the Quarterly Report.
We always go overtime when Armand come on. I said we need to make sure we have a boxing special one of these days, but we still got straws to talk about.
Fabric. You better call that.
Hey, see, my man Wally watching Lakers game.
Oh, my goodness. Never mind, excuse me.
Hey, bro, chill out.
You know what? We're going to talk.
That's why the Clippers are better, baby. That's another debate for another day.
They're definitely not better. We'll have folks from Talk. We'll have Kevin Nibley from Talk Some Nacks.
Christmas edition next week, baby. Christmas Eve on the Urban Sports Team.
Strasburg re-signing with the Washington Nationals and also Anthony Rendon with the Angels. You listen to Urban Sports Team for ages. You dig? Deuces. Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, Ray Jeezy. Will T is out. Yeah, we're going overtime with the Urban Sports Scene. But right now, I have Talk Nats own Kevin Nibley on the line. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Everything is great. How are you doing? How was the party?
Pretty good. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for moving my time slot back at an office party.
Hey, Kevin, you know, it's all about the team, man. I told you you're family, so I'm going to do it for you.
Hey.
I appreciate it.
The ever-dedicated Kevin Nibley, who he's on no matter what. Even if the Nats are playing in the World Series,
hey,
he's
man,
on the air.
I told you Kevin's part of family, man. Yeah. Kevin is the guy, man. He's part of family.
So we appreciate you going overtime with us tonight.
Hey, so Kevin, all right, so what did you think when the Nationals signed Steven Strasburg to a 7-year, $245 million contract? He got the bag.
I thought it was pretty crazy. I think the last time we talked, my prediction was probably more like 6 years, $180 million. So on one, you know, on one side, I'm very happy they kept him. Obviously, he was money in the playoffs. I think they were 5-0 this postseason when he pitched. They literally never lost. So, you know, a pitcher like that, obviously, you know, something you got to have if you want to kind of go back and try to defend your title or compete in the playoffs. But I was surprised at how big the contract ended up. And I was definitely really surprised this whole free agency period, how big the numbers actually got, you know, for sure.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. I have Talk Nats, Kevin Nibley on the line. So, by signing Strasburg, the Nats had to let go Anthony Rendon. He signed a 7-year deal, $245 million contract with the Angels. Was this the right move for the ball club to let, you know, Rendon walk, knowing that in terms of money wise?
Yeah, I mean, if you could only pick one, which it seems like that's what it was, they could only pick one. It's a tough call, but I do think, you know, picking the pitcher, you know, look, there are only 10, you know, 5 to 10 eighth level starting pitchers in the whole game. You know, losing Rendon, you know, there are 8 positions in your lineup where you can fill that production. You know, everyone's focused in right now on Josh Donaldson and kind of try to do like a 1-for-1 swap to replace Anthony's production. But I mean, there are 8 spots. You could get a better first baseman. You could get a better outfielder, move Soto to first. You know, there are a million ways to kind of make up
what Anthony gave you, where in terms of, you know, ace starting and pitching in the postseason, there's like five guys, you know, that are as good as Strasburger, scary as Strasburger, you know, Cole or someone like that. So, you know, I think it hurts to see Anthony go. A lot of people are over Harper. A lot of people are actually happy on some level when Harper left. But, you know, losing Anthony is a bummer. But at the same time, you know, how many guys do you want to have on your roster that you're paying $35 million to when they're 37 years old? You know, it's not really a recipe for success to have, you know, a ton of guys. So, yeah, as a fan, I'm disappointed. But, you know, that's just the reality of winning the World Series. I mean, the funny thing is, if let's say they didn't have that crazy comeback against the Brewers and they get bounced in the wild card round, you know, they actually probably would have had enough money to keep both of them. You know, both of them probably would have been significantly cheaper. So, unfortunately, I guess that's the price of success in their World Series title is these guys got paid, you know.
Hey, Kevin, how would you feel if you were Howie Kendrick looking at all the money that just got dealt out to Strasburg, Gerrit Cole, and then he got the contract he got?
I know, right? He was the most valuable player in that run.
I know. he saved the season. And that dude, I mean, he got, in comparison, he got chump change. But, you know, I'm just being funny. I am excited, though, about the upcoming season because I feel like, you know, Victor Robles is going to continue to get better. Yeah. And it's amazing because we were all, as Nationals fans, like Michael A. Taylor's the guy, you know. And then to see Robles emerge.
I like Robles.
And you're not a Nationals fan. to see Robles, you know, just coming to his own and he's so young and you still got Soto for another couple years. To me, that just garners more excitement for us, you know, moving forward to next season and building off this championship. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, like a lot of people are bummed that, you know, they lost Anthony, but I mean, you know, you look at this team, Soto is just turned 21. You know, I think he turned 21 during the World Series and they have him for five more years. Robles, I believe is 22. He's not that much older. Yeah. They have him for five more years. So, Trey Turner, they have for three more years. Carter Kieboom, Carter Kieboom, you know, hasn't debuted yet. I believe he's 21, 22, and, you know, they're going to have him for six or seven more years if he hits. So, you know, from the position player side of things, the Nats have a lot of great young players. And, yeah, it's funny with Howie. You know, he hit the man, he slammed in L.A., and you know, he pitched the homer off the south hole, and the ball's going to be in Cooperstown, and he's a legend, and he comes back for $6 million. Donaldson, he's going to be 34. You know, they want to pay him $25 million a year to leave, you know, 50. I don't know. So, yeah, the poor Howie. But I'm really glad Howie came back. He's definitely someone that is an Nats fan. I wanted to see come back.
Absolutely. Life isn't fair, man. It really isn't. but like you mentioned Carter Kieboom, before I let you go, you mentioned Carter Kieboom. Why not have that as an option for him to play third? Like, he's a guy that everybody looks at, you know, as a guy that could be special. Why not look at him as an option?
I think he could be. He doesn't, you know, mostly in the minors, he was a shortstop, and then they tried him at second base. In the majors last year, he wasn't so hot. You know, he hasn't played a ton of third, but, you know, look, the kid, he's a young kid. I mean, when Trey Turner came up, they put him in center field for half the season, you know, and it worked out, right? So yeah. I'm sure if they want to throw him in at third, I'm sure, you know, they could put him there at spring training and work on it. And, you know, I think he has a lot of potential. You know, a lot of people got down because of his, I think he was up for about 11 games last season. It wasn't the most spectacular.
Hello?
a lot of guys haven't been great, you know, in their first little 10, you know, games in the majors. So, no, I think Kieboom could be an option. And, you know, but it's one of those things, though, where I think with Kieboom, you're going to want to get, like, sort of a veteran kind of handcuff to him, you know. So the idea of maybe you put him at second and you bring back his Drubal Cabrera, who's a left-handed hitter, and Kieboom's a right-handed hitter. And that way, if Kieboom isn't, you know, if it takes him a while, you know, you could go back, you could go to the veteran, and he's not going to be counted on, you know, as a rookie, you know, to start on opening day and and you know, be in the middle of your lineup or anything like that. But I do think that people are forgetting about him, and you know, he's a top 20 prospect in baseball, and it's certainly possible he could come up this season and hold down an infield spot.
Yeah, I think he has a lot of potential. I mean, I saw potential. Obviously, you know, last season being a rookie, you know, you could tell like the major league game got, you know, being in the majors mm-hmm. kind of got to him. But I think with time, he can definitely be special.
For sure. Yeah, definitely.
Hey, Kevin, well, thanks for being on. Kevin, before I let you go, man, let our folks know about Talk Nats and also how they can catch you on social media.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You can follow our podcast. It's at Talk Nats Podcast. We just did a new one a couple of weeks ago, and we'll probably do another one during the off season. And go to TalkNats.com. It is the most fun, intelligent place on the internet to talk about the Nationals.
Well, Kevin, man, you know I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on, my man.
All right, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, now enjoy the party, okay?
I will do.
That's the homie Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats. Make sure you check him out. Check him out. Check out the podcast as well. So subscribe to it. Subscribe to Talk Nats podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, where all that good podcast stuff is being
awesome.
Sold.
Good show, you know, fam. Good show.
Great show, man.
Good seeing you. Merry Christmas. If I don't see you next week,
you
even though
it.
We're scheduled to be on
for now
Christmas Eve, but yeah, I don't know yet. We got to see what's happening. There's some Christmas Eve events taking place.
You know it, man.
So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Even for me,
I will have the Virgin Jello shot. You know, if you want one, I got
you.
You
know, I'm about that life right now. So you already know. Anyway, man, appreciate my man Ray. Will T. You know he's not here. Appreciate him too.
Will T hasn't been on since October 31st.
This is true. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Site for ages. Shitty deuces. Hey, mega, leave us out, big homie. Swag, legend, to the swag, legend, to the swag.